Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and are always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today we have an author interview with Natasha Lester. Natasha writes unique historical fiction set in World War II, yet she incorporates fashion into her writing. Her latest book, The Paris Secret, comes out this week. In this interview, we chat about her research process, what it's like to write multiple timelines, and of course, some random book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Natasha. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am the author of a couple of books of historical fiction set in Paris, The Paris Seamstress and The Paris Orphan, and The Paris Secret is my latest book. Mm-hmm. As you can probably tell by the accent, I'm Australian and I live in Perth, Western Australia, with my one husband, two chickens and three children. I guess I'm a bit of an amateur fashion historian and I really enjoy reading about fashion history and collecting vintage fashion.
And we're going to talk about that a little later on, so I'm excited. So what inspired you to become a writer?
I loved to read when I was a kid. In fact, I would have to say that was probably my favourite thing to do. And my mum took us to our local library every week, really, where I would get an armload of books out and then I would spend the next week making my way through those books. And when I wasn't reading books, I was writing little stories and poems and illustrating my own picture books. And so I was pretty much the kid whose nose was always buried in a book. And I just loved the feeling of literally being lost in the world of a book and that feeling of being swept out of the present world into another world with people who seemed real. And I used to think to myself, wow, how amazing would it be to be able to create that same feeling for readers? So I guess that's what inspired me to become a writer, that early love of reading, that early, you know, love of making my own books, and that what that feeling of wanting to gift people the feeling that I had, the sensations I had when I was reading a book.
I love this. And so what was your journey to get that first book published?
Well, I took a little bit of a longish kind of path to get there, I guess. When I left school, I still, you know, the subjects that I'd loved at school were things like English literature and history, and I still had this idea that I wanted to be a writer, but I guess I didn't really know how to be a writer. We didn't have writing degrees at our universities back then. So I did a marketing degree and I worked in marketing for about 10 years, I guess. And I had some great jobs. I worked with L'Oreal Paris as their marketing manager for Maybelline Cosmetics for a number of years, and that was lots and lots of fun. So I really enjoyed those years in marketing, but it wasn't my passion, I guess. And then through a series of circumstances, we were living on one side of Australia and we had to move to the other side for my husband's work. And so I had to kind of quit my fabulous job and really start again. And so rather than just go back and look for another job, I decided to return to university. And by that time, there were creative writing degrees available. And so I enrolled in a Master of Creative Arts and I wrote my first book as my master's thesis. And I guess I wanted to learn the craft of writing and also find out whether I was any good at it and whether I really would enjoy it, because I had an idea that I would, but I guess the reality can sometimes be a little bit different. But I loved it and I got great feedback from my university tutors, and then I submitted that book that I'd written as part of my thesis to an award, a fiction award, and it won, which was very surprising. And that book, because it won the award, was then published. So that was different to my historical fiction. It was sort of contemporary fiction, and that was back in 2010. And really, I guess everything kind of progressed from there with a few detours and bumps along the way, as there always are in the path of any writer.
I had a question because you're an Australian author, but you published for a New York publisher and you also got published in Australia. Is the publishing process different in Australia as it is in New York process, or is it something similar?
So it's been a really interesting experience because there aren't that many Australian authors who end up, you know, being published by a New York based publisher. So yeah, it's been a big learning curve for me as to how all of that works. So at the moment, I essentially have been writing my books and submitting them to my Australian publisher, and then the US kind of got on board with The Paris Seamstress, which was fantastic and very unexpected. Mm-hmm. And then that book did really well, and so then they wanted more books, which was again all great. So mm-hmm. it's a little bit different for me. Mostly a writer would submit the book to their American publisher and it would be edited over there, but my books are submitted to my Australian publisher, edited here in Australia, and then sent off to the US, where we then do a kind of what I call the Americanization copy edit, where we change all the spellings to American spellings and, you know, change words that, you know, Australian readers don't use, like, you know, diaper and nappy and trash and rubbish and things like that. So it's a little bit fun, actually. And because I usually have American characters in my book and I've spent quite a lot of time in New York myself, I mean, it's actually sometimes hard for me to remember to use the Australian expressions sometimes. So, it's really nice, actually, to have that interaction with publishers in different parts of the world and, you know, great editorial input from different editors and different perspectives. So I'm very lucky.
That's amazing. That's fascinating. I was wondering, it was like, you know, because they get published in different places and like, what's the process like? And you know,
yeah.
So that's fascinating. All right. So sort of are you writing an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
I really just see where the story leads me. I'm a very planned and organized person in every single area of my life, except when it comes to writing. I thrive on lists. And so I always assumed that when it came to writing, I would be an outliner and I would know what I was doing and I would have a plan. And then I sat down to do a plan for my first book and I didn't know what to do. I had no ideas at all. And so my university supervisor said to me, just write whatever is in your head and trust that the story will work itself out in the end. And I found that very confronting and very scary to just trust in this story when I didn't even know what this story was. But luckily, I was very lucky that I did write that first book with a supervisor at university and as part of that kind of, structured forum, because having her advice was so helpful. I don't know that I would ever have, I look back and I wonder whether I would have persevered if I hadn't have had someone telling me it's okay, you don't need a plan, you can just write. And so for my second book, I thought, okay, well, now that I've written a whole book, I'll be able to plan up front. I've got it all sorted out. Tried again, couldn't do it, and just had to kind of, you know, stumble through the book until the end. Then the third book, I thought, well, no, now definitely I'll be able to plan. And no, I have never been able to plan a book up front. It's the bane of my life that I can't do that. But for me, I guess I've learned to trust that the story will work itself out in the end. And I've also learned to appreciate the fact that not planning means that you can be more spontaneous about the story. You can really enjoy just going along with where the story takes you and not feeling guilty because you've gone off plan or something like that. Mm-hmm. And also that when the story surprises you as a writer, therefore it's more likely to surprise the reader perhaps. So mm-hmm. I've learned to love those elements of it while still kind of, you know, struggling with the whole uncertainty of it. And, you know, every time I sit down to write, I think, oh my God, what if this is the book that doesn't work itself out in the end? Because surely there must be one of these days.
I feel you. I think it's just, so I had a question. Do you write fast and just do a draft and then go back and revise it? Or how does the process look like? Do you spend a lot of time revising or just basically your first draft tends to grow with it?
Yeah, so I really have to write that first draft very quickly because I'm trying to work out what's going on. And so I want to race through it to work out what the end is, because I don't know what the end is often when I'm sitting down to write a book. So that first draft is really fast. Maybe it takes me about 8 weeks to write that. But it also means that because it is so fast and because there wasn't really much planning and I didn't really know a lot about what I was doing when I started, it's very messy. It's full of holes and gaps and very rough, and I wouldn't ever show it to anybody. I would be mortified if they thought that was how I wrote a book. So it's the redrafting and rewriting for me that takes the longest in terms of my writing process. So whilst I'll spend 8 weeks on writing a first draft, I'll then spend, you know, 9 months on rewriting and redrafting. And so I might do 5 or 6 drafts of the book to really polish it up and fill in all those gaps. And I guess really, technically, the way I look at it is that my first draft is my plan in a way. That's when I work out what the story is, what the shape of it is, and what research I need to do, and how. And then the redrafting is all about, you know, making it the best possible version of that very skeleton kind of first draft that I have.
I'm always fascinated with the writing.
I know, everyone is so different, aren't they?
It is. It's so different. You know, putters to putt everything, and then cancers, you just like write fast, and then just like they're like cutting down, adding things, and just molding the final work and revising. So it's just fascinating. So,
yeah, it is. And when I first started writing, like, I really didn't know that you could write without a plan. I just assumed that all writers did, because I mean, not, you know, you don't, we're back when I started writing, I didn't really know a lot about what other writers did. And so it's quite liberating, I think, to hear writers say, no, you don't necessarily need to have a plan. If it doesn't work for you, you should just, you know, you've got to find your own writing process, I guess. Everybody does.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And so you write historical fiction, and we talked about that. What is the research process like for you?
So the research process is lots of fun. I, living in Australia and writing books set largely in Europe, I mean, in a normal non-pandemic year, I would travel to Europe to do my research. Obviously, ooh, this year that isn't happening. So for The Paris Secret, for example, I went to a part of that book is about a woman called Catherine Dior, Christian Dior's sister. And so I went to France kind of looking for more information about Catherine, and that led me to the ex-Dior family home in a little town called Granville in Normandy in France, where the Dior's used to live, and it's now turned into a museum dedicated to Christian Dior mainly. But there's a little, I found little snippets about his sister there, photographs and information about her as a child. So that was quite, you know, really quite interesting, because she was quite a difficult subject to research in that there isn't a lot of information out there about Catherine Dior. Then I went to Paris and looked at a beautiful exhibition at the Musée des Arts Décoratifs, a beautiful exhibition of Dior gowns, which I just loved. And in that exhibition, I did actually find some evidence of Catherine Dior, which was quite wonderful too. I wasn't kind of expecting to find that, but one of the display cases had a handwritten letter from Christian Dior to his father, written in April 1945, about Catherine's liberation from Ravensbrück concentration camp, where she was sent by the Nazis because of her resistance work during the war. And so I was so thrilled to find that kind of evidence of Catherine's existence and her experiences. And because, as I say, she was quite hard to research. So that was fantastic. And then I also went across to England to research the storyline about Skye, the main character, who is one of the very first female pilots in England. So I knew nothing about flying and the mechanics of flight, and the idea of reading a dry technical explanation of flying and piloting didn't appeal to me. So I went to museums instead and looked at all the old aeroplanes that she would have flown, and lots of photographs of the few women who did fly those planes during wartime for the Air Transport Auxiliary, and did all my research based on, you know, those kinds of archival documents that for me bring the people and the objects to life rather than just kind of sitting down and reading about them in a book.
Yeah, I got a question. So how do you create the idea? Like, these are the things when you mention, they don't make sense. It makes sense when you read the book, but it doesn't make sense to talk about like a poet and Christian Dior and, you know, how do you come up with the idea and then figure out the research and all the different pieces, you know? And
yeah, I know. For me, it's always like that, where I have a couple, two or three seemingly completely unconnected ideas. And yeah. I guess the thrill of that is trying to make them come together into a story. And that's, I know, it's a very weird thing. I mean, when I first emailed my editor and said, I want to try to book about Catherine Dior, Christian Dior's gowns, and female pilots in World War II. Luckily, she was used to the way my mind works, and she just went, yeah, that sounds fabulous. But I think a lot of editors would have gone, what? How are you going to make that work? But I think, you know, I always say that, you know, the hardest part for me is there's almost too much to fit into the book, because there's so many things I wanted to write about. But mm-hmm. I came across the story of the female pilots when I was researching the Paris Orphan, and I had no idea that women flew the RAF's planes during the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, people need to know about that, because that was just incredible. So I wanted to write about them desperately. I'd come across the story of Catherine Dior a few months earlier and couldn't believe that nobody knew about her, but she worked for the French Resistance during the Second World War. She was sent to Ravensbrück concentration camp. She nearly died there. She was this heroic woman, and she'd been forgotten by history. So I wanted to write about her. And then I had this idea about this, you know, collection of Dior gowns that someone might stumble upon in the cottage, in the wardrobe of an abandoned cottage. And I wanted to write about that too. So luckily I was able to get it to work. But again, that's really, I guess, what that first draft is all about. It's about writing out those stories and seeing how I can make them come together in a way that seems believable and realistic and engaging for the reader, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So talk about timelines and talk about the multiple storylines. Do you write them all at once, or do you write one at a time, or do you write them straight through, or do you write pieces together? How does that process look like for you?
So for me, and I think this again comes down to not being able to plan up front, I have to write each storyline separately mm-hmm. because I've got to work out what's going on in each storyline before I can work out how I might weave them together. So for example, in The Paris Secret, the storyline with Skye becoming a female pilot for the war effort in England and her kind of friendship with Nicholas Crawford, I wrote that whole storyline out first. And then I sat down and wrote the contemporary storyline, which is all about a woman called Kat, who whose grandmother, Margot, has a quite mysterious past. And Kat's the woman who finds the collection of Dior gowns, and she wants to work out how they're connected to her grandmother. So I had to write that out to work out, you know, how the gowns were actually connected to her grandmother. And then there's also a third storyline in The Paris Secret, which is about Margot, who's a model for Christian Dior. And I didn't write that till very late, that storyline. I had finished both the contemporary and the historical storyline, and there was just something missing from the book. And I literally had this, I know you can't call it a vision because it's like words rather than images, but I had all these words just pour into my head one day, and they were the first, the opening scene of the book, the prologue, where Margot is wearing the bath suit at Christian Dior's first showing in Paris in 1947, and that scene literally just landed in my head almost word for word, and I hurried up to my office, pulled out a notebook and scribbled it all down with pen, and realised that I needed to have a storyline with Margot in there as well. And so then I wrote that, you know, probably about 8 months into the process of writing the book, so that came quite late, but it was the thing I needed to tie it all together. So yes, all separate. And then I look at, well, okay, now I've got these storylines, what's the most engaging and interesting way to kind of weave them together? And that usually involves changing my mind quite a lot. I'll try something out and I think, no, it'll work better if I do it this way. And so there's a lot of experimentation, I think, at that phase, which is kind of fun, I guess.
So let's talk about fashion, because you incorporate fashion into World War II historical fiction, which is like something unique. Like, it's not just the Paris book, it's just the fashion. Like, Paris Seamstress has the fashion, Paris Secret has the fashion. I did not read Paris Orphan, it's on my TBR, but I'm assuming there's some fraction there. So let's talk about, like, mentioning your early, you know, earlier that you're fascinated by fashion. Like, talk to us about that process and how do you incorporate it into historical fiction?
So, yes, I think it's safe to say that when you're writing about something that you love, I think the reader can kind of feel that love. So when I started writing historical fiction, it just, and, you know, people need to wear clothes and you often have to describe what the character is wearing. It just seemed really natural to me to choose an actual dress from history rather than make something up for them to wear. And so I guess the whole love of writing about fashion started there, where just simply the act of clothing my characters in real historical garments from the time, rather than inventing something. And then I suddenly thought, well, what if I actually didn't just focus on the clothes that they were wearing, but, you know, pulled that love of fashion into the storyline as well. And so, yeah, that really did start with the Paris seamstress, where I wanted to write about the birth of the ready-to-wear fashion industry in Manhattan during the 1940s, when Paris was kind of occupied by the Germans and the Parisian fashion industry was therefore kind of closed down to the rest of the world. And I loved that so much that when it came time to write The Paris Secret, and I'd read about this woman being bequeathed this amazing, you know, decade collection of couture that spanned decades. And as soon as I read about that, I thought, well, I need to write about that. So, you know, I think it's just, you know, I like researching it, so it makes that part of it fun. I know a fair bit about it anyway. I've got a ton of books on my bookshelf about historical fashion. And it is just a bit of a different angle, I guess, when you're writing, you know, wartime historical fiction, there's a bit of competition out there. And so if there is a way to make your book slightly different to the others on the shelf, then that's always a good thing. And I guess my kind of point of difference is that there's this, you know, fashionable thread running through my books, which readers seem to enjoy, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's unique. As someone who gets burned out by World War II books, I found The Paris Seamstress to be like a breath of fresh air. Like, it was like,
yeah,
it was so different. Like, it was like different tone. Like, it was just like, it, there was war, but there was also fashion. And there was like the intrigue.
Yeah.
it was just like the right thing. So I was looking forward to this book because I'm like, there's more fashion. You know, pilots, but we get haute couture, you know? Designers that we know about. So. So what would you do if you discovered a stash of haute couture dresses?
Well, I think first of all, I would scream in excitement. And then I would probably get every single piece out and have a look at it. And then I would basically just wear every single piece, no matter what I was doing. Even if I was just sitting in my office writing, I would have one of my beautiful couture finds on. I mean, really, writing that storyline in The Paris Secret was basically writing my dream. Like, I wish that would come true. So anyone out there who wants to bequeath me a vintage fashion wardrobe, go right ahead.
I love this. So what are some of your upcoming projects?
So I am working on a book called The Riviera House at the moment, which will be out in 12 months' time, so September 2021. And that, again, similar to my previous books, picks up on a real-life female from the 1940s who worked in a very unique and different part of the French resistance, the resistance efforts during the war. Mm-hmm. And so it's her story as well as a contemporary storyline that's set entirely in a beautiful French town called St. John Cap Ferrat on the French Riviera. And that was a lot of fun to both research and write. It's such a gorgeous town. I loved visiting it and knew as soon as I saw it that I had to write about it. And so it didn't feel like a particularly hard work writing that part of the storyline and living back in the French Riviera in my imagination for months on end.
I can't wait. I'm excited. It's like a different setting. That's exciting. You're moving.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they're showing next. What is your favorite genre?
My favorite genre. So I mean, obviously historical fiction is definitely one of my favorite genres, and I read very widely in historical fiction. But I also love, I mean, I'm a pretty wide reader. If you look at my bookshelves, there's pretty much everything except really heavy crime. I'm a very vivid dreamer, so I can't do heavy crime because I just have nightmares and can't sleep. So historical fiction is my number one. I do love memoir for audiobooks. When I'm in the car, I always have an audiobook on the go, and I love memoirs like Michelle Obama's Becoming, particularly ones that are narrated by the person whose life, who wrote the book. Mm-hmm. And for something, you know, completely different, I actually love just a bit of a good rom-com. I recently read Emily Henry's Beach Read and just, you know, loved being swept away in that and, take it into a more contemporary kind of love story. So, yes, read widely, but, you know, historical is definitely my number one genre.
I love this. Tell us where I can find you online.
You can find me online pretty much everywhere. You'll find me on Instagram posting pictures of beautiful dresses at Natasha Lester Author. You'll also find me on Facebook at Natasha Lester Author, sharing snippets of my writing life and my writing day. And my website is natashalester.com.au.
Thank you, Natasha, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance-loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.